Right. Okay. South African Railway Commuter Corporation. Nothing more time. Welcome. Good to have you. Sorry about the little bit of a delay. But we're under a lot of pressure to pump out legislation. And I think we've got some coming with you as well, around social of the mayor in particular, yeah, and which we're anxious to get quickly. But anyway, welcome, and welcome to your team. Over to you.
We are seeing visible improvements, of course, due to that turnaround strategy. And I think that we are trying to find a way of sustaining those visible improvements that we're seeing in the system. Of course, I want to emphasize that we are not saying that we'll turn around rail transport, rail passenger transport. We're simply saying that the positive indicators, that some positive things are beginning to emerge in the system. We've seen, of course, over the past 2 to 3 years, an increase in public investment in passenger rail. I think that some years back we having 2.7 billion rand being put by government. And today we talk about the investment in the region of about 5.5 billion rand and growing to over 8 billion rand over the next 2 years. Chair, the current environment in the country and internationally confirms the critical necessity, the importance of having a well-functioning and efficient commuter transport system. I think that the growing economy clearly indicates that there's a huge need for good transport infrastructure. We've seen the challenges posed by congestion on our major roads and metropolitan centers, but then recently the rising fuel cost, where I think people are paying over eight rand a litre for fuel. So I think that the necessity to have a good reliable rail system in the country, I think that it's actually become quite urgent. So the key features of the SRTC, just to highlight, I think we reported on this in the just to indicate to who we are. We've got a network of about 2.8 kilometers, that is of the total rail network in the country, all 15% of that, and the rest, of course, is in the hands of Transnet freight rail, which we used to call Spoornet. I always say to Spoornet, they say they've got the largest network. I say indeed you do, but we have the most strategic network because it's concentrated in the major metropolitan centers of the country. The total fleet of the SRTC commuter fleet is 4,600, which amounts to 409 centers if we do a 12 or 14 coach configuration per train. But you would realize that only just over 3,000 of those coaches are available for us to deliver services on a day-to-day basis. So we've got a system that is designed to deliver services with a capacity of 4,600 coaches, but only a set of those is completely out of service or cannot be deployed because of safety and other considerations. On a day-to-day basis, we do over 2.2 million passenger trips. And I think that is growing. We are quite worried, Chair, that if we take the current trend of growth of almost 10%, we might not be able to meet that kind of demand. That we will not have enough trains, enough capacity in our stations to be able to carry that capacity. So on the one hand, it's good that we are seeing that increase in the numbers of people going back to rail. But at the same time, I think in the short term, the main question is, do we have the capacity so that we don't have overcrowding, we don't have stampede, and all the kinds of risks associated with that. I won't go back to the regions, the way we operate here, I think they're all well known to us. And of course, that we want to confirm once again that the book value of the SRTC, the book value, not the market value, is in the region of about 8 billion rand. So we are sitting on a huge national resource that if it's managed properly, if we unleash its potential, we can contribute to major development and changing the quality of life of people. So the strategic focus, and I want to go back to the issue that you raised in our last presentation, to say, you pose the question, why are we not involved, for example, in buses, in the BRTs, and everything? And I wish to confirm, Chair, that the process of consolidation that was initiated, that commenced with the cabinet decision of December 2004, is well underway. As you are aware, we completed the consolidation of Metro Rail with the SRTC on the 1st of May 2006. And of course, we are due on the 1st of April to take over the long-distance passenger services. The process, in the past, we were just thinking about taking over social roads. But I think that there's been quite a lot of strategic discussion and consideration between ourselves and the Department of Transport. And it said that process must culminate this year in the establishment of an integrated passenger transport company. And that, if you look at the function chain, we are looking at its role, its strategic role beyond beyond rail. That this is a national passenger transport company that first must be a lever, a tool, an instrument to drive public transport strategic goals. I mean, those goals about integration, accessibility, affordability, and safety. And of course, it must provide integrated transport solutions in a sense that we are now interested in looking at the total journey rather than just taking people from one station. And I think those are issues that we've reflected on. And I think that when we come with a bill, when the Minister of Transport tables a bill for the amendment to the Labour Association Act, we'll see that theme coming through. That we are trying to build an integrated, a vertically integrated transport company that must begin to be the main driver in public transport objectives. And I think that has been
Hallelujah. Very nice.
It might have come a long way to but that is the direction that we have. Of course, the rail would remain still at the core of that company. So we'll have the responsibility to plan, develop, and invest in rail infrastructure that will be owning and managing rail assets, and we'll be exploiting those assets to generate resources to fund rail. And of course, that strategic tool in public transport, I think in the past we spoke about the juncture between land use and transport planning, and we think that that company should actually allow and facilitate that land use integration as well in the further on, I think that we are saying therefore that this company, with the consolidation of social laws are made, should be able to provide four key services. The first being commuter rail, which in the metropolitan area. Secondly, with social laws are made, but I think you'll see our emphasis is different there. We think that social laws should not be only doing long distance, but it must be positioned to provide regional services between, for example, Umtata and East London, services such as Rustenburg and Johannesburg. I think that we feel that there's a huge gap that social order should be closing, unlike the current situation that we have. And of course, the property and station development is a major part of our own business, and we think that is very important. So I won't go much into the fourth one that we'll have. We'll run our own feed and distribution services in the form of buses. There are a number of discussions taking place here, and I think that at the time when we present the legislation, it will become clear. But let me say that at this point in time, where it's such an advantage to have the autopen, the buses, being moved over to supplement this. And I think for social laws, if we take somebody from Johannesburg to Mthatha, or from Johannesburg to Limpopo, there should be buses that take them further from Johannesburg. And we think that the possibilities of the acquisition of autopen, which in terms of transport is regarded as a non-core, but for us we are running a passenger transport service, is a core business. So I think that there's that discussion, and we think that it will give us a lot of flexibility. It will ensure that we provide a much more seamless travel experience to people, and ensure that the quality of travel, both in the commuter and the regional as well as long distance, is improved. So of course, in terms of achieving that goal, there are a number of things that we need to do. The major one being, of course, the amendment to the Legal Association Act to give effect to this strategic goal. And I think the Department of Transport will be formally taking that bid, and will make our further contribution to that process. We are of course in touch with the department to make sure that bill that is being drafted gives effect to the strategy and the kind of vision that we are trying to pursue over the next few years. Of course, part of that is the conclusion of an agreement, a sale of business agreement and other related agreements between the SRCC and Transnet on social laws. There's quite a lot of issues there. There are assets and access to the network, because social laws relies essentially on a network that is owned by Swarovski and less on the network that is owned by SRCC. So there are holding charges and other things that need to be negotiated so that we make sure that we provide quality as well as affordable services. So I think this agreement We have already drafted some of these documents, and probably the end of March, we'll be signing the necessary documents and agreements to give effect to this process. The funding and turnaround plan for Shosholoza, I think when we deal with the budget, we see in our presentation that we've received an extra R1 billion for Shosholoza over the next 3 years, but I'll go into the details at the later stages to what has been our submission to government in terms of the funding for Shosholoza and what are its requirements thereof. And of course, there is a discussion and initiative by the Department of Transport to recapitalize public transport more generally, and I think some of the initiatives will also be fitting into that kind of program. So I think at the more strategic level, that is the direction that we are trying to take, unlike the situation that they put in Shosholoza run only services as they are, that we are saying that we are a transport company operating in a public transport sphere, and that should be reflected. And I think that is the kind of perspective that we want to put before the committee. So the key highlights, I think when we presented our budget and our strategic plan in February last year, which we continued of course later in the year with our annual report, we made a number of commitments and said the financial year is not yet over. However, I wanted to present some of the positive things that we think are coming, the key highlights that are coming through. We have made a commitment to deliver 500 additional coaches that are graded, refurbished into the system. I want to report today that today, at the end of February, 415 of those coaches has already been delivered into the system. They are back in service, and by the end of the financial year, we'll have delivered 502 of these coaches, because that is very important to improve availability, to reduce overcrowding, and ensure that our people travel in comfort as well as in dignity. In terms of passenger trips, I reported here with the last annual report that over a period of 10 to 12 years, we've seen passenger trips dipping by almost 100,000 train trips. But we want to report today that over the past year, or in the current financial year, since April, we've seen passenger trips increasing by a whopping 12.4%, above the target that we have set ourselves in that business plan. And I think it's a good sign, that we are beginning to have a service that is responding to passenger demands that are there.
And what was your target? So 12% above?
Yeah. So we're going to increase by 4%, and it was going over a period of 3 years. It was going to increase by 6% overall. And I think that we carried double the numbers, and we've done double the trips with the capacity that we have. I think it's putting a lot of pressure and strain on the system, but it shows the kind of potential capacity that if we invest in rail, these are the kind of results that we have. On fair revenue share for this current financial year, we've set the target of 1%, and in future we've increased by 7.6% about the target that we set ourselves. I think that in some of the regions we've seen that the 7.6% is the growth on the average growth, but some of the regions they're over 10% making and getting that income that we need. In terms of punctuality, Chairperson, I think that we set ourselves the target of making sure that we have trains at 87%, but we're at 86.21%. I think that we are almost there. When we look at that, the last quarter, for example, starting from December, most of our regions have been performing above the 90% thing. We think that's in line with our stabilization. If we put it at around 87%, it will be able to provide services in a more comfortable way in line with the existing capacity that we have. Of course, here I think there's a debate whether 87%, even within our own board, 87% is it a realistic target? Other people feel it's below. Other people think it's high. But when I look at the performance of other rail companies around the world, the German 10% performed at around 98-99%. And the German public was still not clean. They said 99%, 98% is still not good enough. it means therefore that even if we were to achieve the 89% or some of our regions breaking the 90%, we should be able to do more, particularly when new rolling stock or additional capacity is being put into the service. We should be able to provide more trains that are on time, more trains that are clean, and trains that are predictable services as well. So I'm not going to take the breakdown, but you see that the weak link in our system at this point in time is Tshwane. I think that the trains, of course, over the past few months we've recovered, but for the bulk of the year, for most part of the year last year, we've been operating at around 76%. Now it has gone over 81%, and I think even overtaking Durban. So those are the two regions where we are putting a lot of focus on to make sure that we improve on punctuality and the performance of our train services more generally. Train cancellations, Chair, we said that we want to reduce cancellations by 2%, and Chair, we are below that, which means that, it shows that we are trying to stick as much as possible to the scheduled service that we have, to the same schedule that we set ourselves. And of course, this year, we launched two important products into the service. We launched the Soweto Business Express, and we've launched also the Kainita Express. And I think if you look at the performance of those two, we have said, and I remember that the members asked a question, how are they performing? Are they delivering the results? And I think they're beginning to assist. We've seen, for example, in Bed, that over 200, about 200, between 287 and 305 passengers use this service on a regular basis. And it's been, if you look at punctuality level, it's been 97% on time. The same can be said about the time express. I think that the only time since launch, that's only on a single day, when it was delayed, I think that if you look at the performance in general, 100%, it was only on two occasions when it was at around 98-99%. So it means therefore that the expresses are assisting us to bring the discipline in terms of achieving the punctuality levels within the system. And we think that these are the same things that will play a major role as we move forward in the future. Chair, our customer satisfaction, when we reported the last time, we were talking about that we want to put it at about 65%. But we can report today that our customer satisfaction, which is done through proper surveys, sits or stands at about 70%. And we think that it shows that we are beginning. Yes, we haven't turned it around, but it's an indication. It's an clear indicator that we are beginning to restore that public confidence in our rail system. Security, Chair, in terms of crime, I think that we reported the last time, but I must say, Chair, take this opportunity to commend and congratulate the railway police. Since their introduction in the system, Chair, they've done wonders. They've made over 28,000 arrests in the system from all sorts of crime, and that is why when we see the 33% reduction in crime in trains, I think that we see that is a kind of positive effect or impact that the railway police are having on our own environment. Yes, Chair, the target is to have 5,000 of those. We have already deployed 1,814 in the different regions of Metro Rail, and we think that by the end of this year, when we have exceeded the 2,500 milestone, the quality of security and safety in our own train, on our own trains and stations would have improved quite tremendously. On the safety incident, Chair, I think that we've seen a significant reduction. However, in the recent past, we've had, of course, a few derailments, train collisions where a train would hit a vehicle at level crossings. I think that is one area where we think that we should be improving quite a lot, and I'll deal with that as part of our safety management plan. On BEE, Chair, I think that we are seeing now for the first time SRC in the region spending quite a lot of money on companies that we call black economic empowerment companies. Our CAPEX budget, Chair, we spend 85% of that budget with 93% of that being spent on our rolling stock, particularly accelerated rolling stock, and the 415 coaches that we brought back into service. 2010 chair, I think we are on course. Yes, the first 2 years after the introduction of the public transport infrastructure fund, there's quite a lot of delays, and that was due to primarily the consolidation process on the one hand, and secondly the fact that most of those projects were not fully funded. But I'm glad to report here that we adopted a 10T approach where we integrated the process of rolling out this project, and projects over 700 million of the 1.3 billion range for 2010 is a project in rail, especially on stations, have been committed here, and the contractors are going on site, and most of those projects will be completed in March, April next year. Some of them will be ready in time for the Confederation Cup in 2009. So we are also happy with the fact that in terms of the contact point, which are the police facilities at the railway station, 70% of those are under construction, with 12 of those completed, which means 12 are completed and are operational, and of the remaining 12, most of those are 70% complete, which means by the end of the year, most of the contact points at our own station to provide safety and security, or to create an environment of safety and security, would have been completed. So the recent approval by Cabinet of Moloto Rail Corridor has been an important boost for us. I think that at the cost of 8 billion rand, yes, Cabinet has approved the first phase of Moloto, which is from Tshwane to Siyabuswa. I think that it will relieve the congestion. The many buses that move between Moloto and Tshwane, there's about 600 buses that move one way in the morning, one way in the afternoon. People waking up at 2 a.m., leaving their home, their children, and coming back into their own home after hours, 10, 11, and sometimes not even able to see their own children. So we need the introduction of a rail system that is reliable with a good bus feeder system. I think that we think that it will improve. So the commitment by government, by cabinet, that will to approve Moloto Rail Corridor and commit 8.6 billion rand. I think that is a major investment here. There's a rider share in terms of that. The cabinet approval stipulates very clearly that the Moloto Rail Corridor will be done on the standard gauge, like the current cable gauge, which is a narrow gauge. And I think, Chair, that is from a technology point of view, from the issue of interoperability, I think that is going to be a major challenge. But I think, consistent with the decision that has been made, even by the African Union, that new rail projects, we need to build them on a standard base and a standard gauge, so that we can be forward-looking, so that we can be able to bring the new technologies, unlike keeping on what our minister calls the Cecil John Rhodes system that is there. And, Chair, we've visited other countries, Berlin, in Switzerland, where we've seen countries using both systems, both the narrow and the wider gauge, and we think that from a technological point of view, it's something that is feasible, it's very viable, and it can be done. Particularly for long distance travel chase, you need that speed. You don't need to travel from Johannesburg to Cape Town and spend 27 hours on the track. You should be able to do that in a lesser period of probably 14 hours, between 10 and 14 hours, if you've got a much faster rail system that's there. So the launch of the K-Rail service, I think that it was also another positive thing that happened this month from a rail perspective. It encourages us, and I think it has inspired a lot of people. People who studied in the Eastern Cape have been calling us to say, when I studied in 1970, 1980, I used to use that train. So Mr. Farrell is confirming that we've restored that service now, and I think that more coaches will be brought in there to ensure that we have a regular service between Mthatha and East London, because there's a huge demand for it. And I wish to report that in May, this year we've made a commitment that from a metro rail perspective in the Eastern Cape, we'll restore and introduce the service between East London and King William Sound. I think many of the members from the South in the Eastern Cape, they see people carrying those brown saying, the Chelsea WT, asking for a lift on that route. And many people, because there was a gap in the provision. So Chelsea will respond to that. And we'll also introduce a service between Islam and Alice, which is a major demand in that particular area. So we've completed the technical feasibility for Cape Town International Airport Reading, which is a 4-kilometer connection between the airport and our existing network, so that we can introduce a train every 15 minutes from the airport into and I think that project is going to cost us over R1 billion. We've discussed the matter with the city of Cape Town, with the mayor of Cape Town this morning, and I think that in principle the city is quite happy with that, and the province has also given support. And we think that for the future of transport, the Cape Town International Airport currently carries over 8 million passengers, and in the next 5 years that would have increased by 10% to about 15 million. We think that the road capacity, the road infrastructure will not be able to cope with that, and we need some kind of a rail system. And international aviation regulation also provides that once you exceed the 5 million, if your airport carries over 5 million, you need to consider a rail link as an option. And we think that is something that we are not building a long railway thing. We are introducing, we are connecting to an existing line and offering a, but it's not only going to benefit people who travel on their planes. There's quite a lot of workers who work at the airport industry or work at the airport itself who would require to have full need that kind of access to the airport. And we think in the long term, it enhances the transport system in the Cape. And I think it's something that we are discussing with both the local, the city of Cape Town, as well as with the provincial government. The other important project for us, which I think we touched on last year in our report, the bridge city development is an integrated mixed development. We've indicated that we'll construct a station under that development that is in the area, the bridge cities around Phoenix, Formashu, Duzuma area in KZN. And I think that project, Chair, the property development is an intermodal facility. We've agreed to build a station under that development. And so you see the next phase that the it is no longer a discussion. That picture there is a key indication that work has commenced with that particular project, that in a few years' time, the first phase of that development will be completed in October 2009, and therefore be able to then put in a station as well as to run a rail service from that terminal. And we think again, Chair, that will give greater access to people in those areas. In terms of inter-site chair, I think there's quite a lot of things that we've done. I think that most of you have gone to the transit station. You'll recall that it's been quite congested. Bus companies like Translux and them are operating from there. We built a new facility next to that station. And I think it has opened up our station. It has allowed for free movement for our own commuters and passengers, and it has allowed the kind of intermodality that we require out of that. The Khayelitsha station, 4A station, is part of our Khayelitsha rail project. It has been completed, and we expect to launch this particular project in October of this year. And I think we spent 70 million rand in the construction of that station in Khayelitsha. We have instructed Interfax to implement what we call a station improvement program, and we provided an amount of 50 million, or rather 300 million rand over 3 years, and you can see that already 40 stations in the different regions are being improved. And here we're not talking about huge upgrades, we're talking about basic improvements, ablution facilities, the lightning, access to the stations. I think those are some of the things that we're talking about. And I think over the next 3 years, we'll say the exercise must bring about improvements to about a year to about 80 stations. Because some of the stations, Chair, you'd agree with me, they're in an appalling condition. So we said we needed to ensure that we address the basics, and 50 million has been spent on 40 different stations to ensure that they just become attractive to our people, and that when people use those stations, they can do so with pride, and they can see that we care about the users of the stations. Yeah, I won't go back to the contact point. I think we've dealt with that as well. So despite all of these improvements that I spoke about, and I think the important improvements, if you look at where we are when we came last year in February to report on our plans and our budget, I think despite this improvement, commuter rail share remains on the knife edge. We're still facing very difficult conditions. And I think that I wouldn't want to mislead the committee to say we've turned the corner. It will take us another year or two for us to say that we are now in a very stable environment. We can take this thing to higher level. As you've seen in Tshwane, we just need two incidents in Tshwane, and it will bring this to the same system. That's how fragile, that's how at the edge this service finds itself. And I think there are a lot of things that a lot of people, including government, want us to do, but we're not able to do. We've been asked, for example, to say, can you improve on the frequencies before 2010, which means more change every 2 minutes. We know that the current signaling system doesn't allow us to do so. If we want to do that, we really choose accidents within that system. We also know that we don't have enough rolling stock to carry people. We also know that the communication system between the drivers and our train control centers is quite weak. All of those are a good sign of the fact that the service remains on the knife edge, that people travel under very difficult conditions. Overcrowding is a feature of the day. So, Chair, I think that it will take us yet another year, because we said we wanted to turn it over a period of 3 years. That's who started that. And we've also said that as part of that stabilization, we want to restore rail to their 1992 service level, because they've declined below that level. And we think that with the introduction of another 700 coaches, we should be able to achieve that stabilization goal. But as it stands, despite those nominal gains that I spoke about, commuter rail remains on the knife edge. And I want to emphasize that point. It means that as you move in the next year, there's still going to be a lot of difficulties that we're going to face. So this improvement here doesn't constitute a turnaround. That's just a good indicator of the fact that some positive things are beginning to see the results of some of the interventions that we're making. And we know the underlying causes here of some of our poor performance. The first one, of course, is the enormous infrastructure backlog of over 25 billion rand. I think that we see it all over. And I think that the lack of investment in the past has contributed significantly to this. We are now paying the price for that lack of investment. I know that people talk about energy sector, about Eskom and the thing, but I think we are, if I'm honest about it, we are almost the same, probably even a worse situation than Eskom. We might not have, the commuter to use rail might not have a very strong voice like the people who are using electricity, but they are traveling under very difficult conditions, and I'll come back to that point. So we are seeing our asset base, our infrastructure is quite old. I think that I'll show in the thing that we use trains that are on average over 40 years of age. And you see that in the failure rate, a train leaves the station, goes to the second station, or before it gets into the third station, just fails in the system. And because it doesn't have crossovers and everything, it means the entire system is paralyzed for that day, which results in a huge unhappiness among the commuters, and sometimes it's expressed in a very bad way, the bending or the destruction of the system. But that is a feature of the system that we have. So the old infrastructure is not enabling us, so we need to move with speed in terms of taking the necessary capital to improve on those. We still face huge operational risk. Overcrowding and the risk of stampede is the order of the day. Chairperson, I think that if the rail safety regulator and ourselves today, and you look at some of our own corridors, inspectors are supposed to take a decision to shut them down. There are people there, but they are operating under conditions that are not safe. And that the risk of a serious accident, which results in loss of life and injuries, both to our own employees as well as to commuters, And I don't know what will be the impact with people not having other choices if you shut down on those things. But the risks are quite enormous. And that's what we're facing on a day-to-day, basis. And of course, the shortage of skills is a major issue. And that's the problem we have. Chair, RAIN has not responded, of course, to special development. And we still see the problem that is there, that people are going to the north. RAIN system is still going. But it doesn't have the flexibility like the road RAIN system. It's going to the east or to the north. Our RAIN goes the opposite direction. And that is why, because of the cost of RAIN, we're not going to build the railways everywhere. But the importance of having an intermodal, integrated public transport system becomes very important so that we complement the weaknesses that we find in the system. Its advantage is very clear, Chair. There are no, in terms of capacity, RAIN is number one. No one comes closer to that. There's no doubt about it. You see, in our stations, you go to the Newton station today. In the afternoon, the platform is packed. A single train comes in, it moves, the platform is empty. But you saw now when we closed the line, the station and the same system of Obama, both the buses and the taxi were not able to cope with the demand that we had. Because for every train, every coach, you probably require about 6 taxis or buses that are there. We need an intermodal thing, but taking advantage of the capacity that RAIN provides. That RAIN provides it for, you know, all public transport. Okay, I must say today, despite all those improvements, I try every month to get them to our train, and whenever the various parts of the country, and I must say that we cannot look at it. Our people continue to travel under very difficult conditions. And let me be bold, Chair, to say that our people continue to travel like cattle in our chain. So we're not giving them the dignity, they're not traveling in comfort. I know, Chair, that it's not an easy statement, but if you see that we talk to our own people, the commuters, they're very clear, most of them say we no longer even care. Women tell us that they're no longer carrying their bags because they're not putting even their high heel shoes because there are no chances of falling or being crushed is an order of the day. And so I'm not talking about something that happens once in a lifetime. It's a daily experience of most of our own people. So I want to say that our people travel under very difficult conditions. They travel like cattle. We put them like some beans in the past, without the dignity, the comfort, and the safety. And I think it's something that we need to talk about, so that in 14 years of democratic order, should we have a public transport system that continues to dehumanize so many people on a day-to-day basis. Yes, there's no justification, but should we get surprised when we have so many people being injured, being killed on that kind of a system? And that is why when people ban trains and everything, it reflects the underlying experiences. I'm not saying it's right. I think we cannot justify it. It's criminal. We should deal with it. But I think that we need to look at what is the experience of it. Can our people respect the assets that we have? Can they respect, you know, every day one of the trains that they're using? It's either cancelled or delayed and everything. And I think that is the point that we need to be honest about, that even when we promise people that we are changing the system, we need to acknowledge the conditions under which they travel. They are not good. And I want to say to the committee that the conditions under which they travel are just not good. Fare evasion is still high. We set ourselves a target of 5%. We are standing at 8.8%. Yes, the reduction in the past, some of our regions where their fare evasion was in the region of 13%, and we think that we can drive it down. But of course, in conditions of high unemployment and everything, I think that we need to be realistic about the targets that we set ourselves. Because yes, the international norm is about 4-5%, but I think that for a country, a developing country like ourselves, we need to allow a bit of space. There are people who get into our train. They go to Pretoria station, but they buy a ticket to just, they buy tickets for the next station, just to get into the system, but they know they proceed. Or get off the station, which is unmanned, because we are not putting, there are stations that don't need two people to jump off, and we are not putting a lot of people there. It's not possible. It will be inefficient for us to put, you know, some of our own people the stations are there for about 2-3 people, and then the bus and bus and the bus. Check the rolling stock and the stations, I think that they're still not accessible to people with disabilities. The gap between the platform as well as the train is enormous. Of course, we reported on the policy that on the policy to address that problem at the last meeting. I think Mr. Gujan did present to the committee on the steps that we're taking. And recently in our own executive, we've taken a decision that some of the most immediate things we need to fix. We've got a lot of patients with gifts that are not going to be. We think that those are immediate and quick wins that we should be able to do. And I think that decision was made. Part of the 2010 chair is to, on the upgrade of stations such as dwelling containers, it's been designed specifically to enable people with disabilities to have greater access to those stations. And of course, the platform height, we are addressing the platform height to find a balance around the country, which will enable somebody, for example, on a wheelchair to be able to access. Of course, there are issues about hearing aids and everything that we cannot retrofit, but those are the things that we are looking at to address that kind of a problem. So despite the 70% of customer satisfaction, I think that for a service like us, the satisfaction level should be in the 90s, not in 70s. So it shows that a huge number of people still remain unhappy. It might sound like a contradiction, but after 70%, yes, 70% is an improvement on what we had before. However, 70% still not good enough. We always want people to say this is our asset, is providing safe and reliable services. And I don't think that we can say that with pride. And I think that is reflected in the mood of people when they talk about rates. So that plan, that graph that we have in front of us, actually they are being presented the last time. And we are deliberately presenting it again to the committee. Because you see here that we are saying that the age profile of our fleet clearly indicates that we've reached a point where this country must just buy new generation trains. Yes, we are implementing what's called the accelerated rolling stock program. We are spending between 5 and 7 billion rand on that program. The additional coaches that I spoke about that are coming, they are only buying us time share for just another 3 weeks. Even if we were to turn this business around in the next 3 years, but we don't get new trains coming to the city by the end of 2011, 2012, then we have a serious problem. It will be back to square one. But because most of them have now come into the 37, they've now exceeded the 37-35 line, I think that we've reached a point where it will not make sense for us to invest into those coaches. We'll have to buy new ones. So the program to repair VHA, it is what it is. It is just buying us time, it's a whole new position, but in the next 3 years, we must have new trains. We must recapitalize the fleet. And here we currently got 4,006. But when you factor in the 10% growth, it means therefore that we're going to require a fleet far bigger than that. So the replacement strategy is going to be massive. Yes, we know that with all the suppliers and rolling stock, we've filled up with Transnet. You order today, so you get them in 3 years. So it means that work has to be completed, and our business plan is very clear about what needs to be done. And we've discussed that with government, and we've got the support. We've been given the support. This is one of the key projects that we want to be completed in the current financial year. So in terms of our turnaround strategy, the some of the highlights that I gave, they reflect that. But I want to summarize once again that we are trying to do 3 things at the same time. The first thing, we're trying to effect significant short-term improvements in terms of the level of service, the quality of services that we provide. Issues of punctuality, safety, cleanliness, and all of that. That's what we're trying to do in the short term. So that even if we have got all trains and everything, the average commuter must experience an improvement in the services that we render. So that is one thing that we're trying to do. Second feature, we're trying to deliver the infrastructure that will take us forward. And I think that on the signaling systems and everything, that's what we're doing. And I'll go into the details later on. and of course it will lay the foundation for future growth. And one of those, for us to meet current and future demand, for us to drive, to divert more traffic into rail, we need to ensure that we've got the kind of rolling stock that will be able to drive us. See, I won't go back. I think the phases are very key in terms of our stabilization thing. We started last year with that first phase, and I think that until 2010, that's what we'll be trying to do. And I think we previously explained what kind of activities or interventions we'll have under the recovery and the growth phase. In terms of the funding allocation, you see that the indeed government has shown its commitment. Minister Manuel, when he announced his budget speech, when he delivered his budget speech last year, when he presented the budget, we were given over the MTF a total amount of 16 billion rand, something that was a massive injection compared to the past, or compared to the previous MTF. I think that the government has clearly shown the commitment and put in and committed the resources. In the last budget, we've seen that growing from 16 billion to 18 billion rand. And that excludes, of course, the fair revenue. So all in all, during this time, we won't eventually be spending 18 billion rand. We'll be spending 25 billion rand. He said that is a massive injection that we have. The main drivers, say, you see that we've been given an additional amount of 500 million this year for social order. It goes from 450 to 400. But let me report here that we've done a detailed due diligence on social order made. And that report came out and you presented it to government, both the Department of Transport and Treasury. The requirement to operate social order made is the funding requirement is a billion rand. We made the presentation to Treasury. Transnet separate from us made its own presentation. And all of us were in agreement. And we didn't collude in any way. There was only a difference of 100 million between us. We have submitted that it requires 1.2 billion. Transnet has said 1.1 billion rand. And we have been given only 500 million rand to do this. And Chair, I've explained to say social order is very important from a transport perspective. But I've explained to the colleagues in government that we should not be given 500 million just to facilitate for us to shut down some of the things. This is an opportunity to extend things, not to shut down things. And I think 500 million rand, it means we'll be running this thing at a very tight, and a tight budget to make it there, because it means we'll be running it, but we won't take initiatives to turn it around. So that doesn't mean, Chair, that we are saying that the cabinet decision to transfer social order was wrong. But I'm just talking about the funding requirement. That the 500 million, social order has been making a loss of over 300 million rand a year, over the years, and that has been covered by, or subsidized rather by Spornet over the years. Now it's been transferred to us. And I think that we factor in a fair income of about 250 million. That's all that we have, 700 million to run this massive service that we need. So Chair, I think that you can see over the years, 500, 450, 400, it would be sending out a positive message if the rate has only increased. It's only declined. And we think that it's something that needs to be looked at. And we've discussed it with both the Department of Transport and Treasury, and they said we will look into the matter so that we make sure that we fund this service at the more appropriate. We also dare say that Transnet has said to us that they do not just want to dump social order, they also want to work with us so that we become a success. And I feel that we take comfort in that. Transnet has also made from their own resources an additional 200 million rand available for the refurbishment of the locomotives that we used. They've transferred 127 of those locomotives to us. They'll be giving us drivers as well as assistant drivers so that we're able to run the kind of services that we need to do. So the capital grant, there's been an increase as you can see, and the increase basically it's not a capital grant where we've been given an additional billion rand over the 3 years to add on to our rolling stock and signaling requirements. And that is why the from the 16 to the 18 billion rand share. The total, of course, when you take into account the public transport, the infrastructure grant, the system grant, will be given 476, 210 that was spent in the new financial year, and another 450. That gives us, of course, the 180 million that was given in the first in 06-07 that we've already committed as well, and that gives us a total of 1.3 billion rand in respect of 2010. But for this year, Chair, we talk about 5.5 billion rand that we have, and that has been allocated both for operational and capital subsidy from government. The breakdown, Chair, in terms of how we want to spend that money, you can see the project that is prioritized in that thing, and I'll explain to one of them when I move down in my presentation about which projects we prioritize and why we prioritize those compared to others. I'll come back to share when I deal with the strategic project to explain further in detail what those priorities are. So if you want to analyze our business, of course, from a financial point of view, the ratio analysis becomes very important. It also tells you how efficient you are. It also tells you whether the subsidy that is given to you by government, is it benefiting as many people as possible? And I think the numbers are very clear for everybody to see you can see our cost coverage is at 5%, which means therefore that we are subsidized by government at about 65%. And I think, Chair, that we think that we could increase on our cost coverage over the years. But a lot of people said to me, but why by 1%? I said, Chair, in the stabilization phase, we are not expanding this. So in the next year, until 2010, I don't see how we are going to be able to expand or to increase on cost coverage, unless, of course, we embark on a program to force people to use training and to arrest on a massive scale those who are not paying beyond the system. And I don't think that we've got the time and the resources to do that type of a thing. But I want to bring to our attention that if you look at the subsidy per passenger and the subsidy per passenger change, those are things from a transport point of view, I think that the committee will look at it, whether we are operating, we are using the resources that the subsidy in a right way to the benefit of the public. And that ratio analysis, I think that we've been discussing. But of course, not in the next 2 years, we're not going to change the ratio. I think that of course, over a 5-year horizon, we are looking at changing the relationship, the subsidy for passenger, income, business expenditure. Those are some of the things that we want you to look at as part of the changes. So our budget for this year that I spoke about is aimed at giving effect to a number of key strategic initiatives that are contained in our business plan, which are submitted to the Department of Transport for approval. The first one, of course, is the social loads are made in line with the strategic direction that our plan is the beginning chair. We've got, of course, over the next 3 years, a billion rand, and I think that the treasury was more open to review the numbers that given to us. So I think that's the major thing that's coming to us, and I won't go into the details around that. But you will see, Chair, that we are bringing the issue of regional services into the picture. That is very important. When we take over social government, we should be able to do those regional services. The current taxi services between, for example, Johannesburg and Bloemfontein, those volumes should be on rail, and not on rail. The current services that we have between Rustenburg and Johannesburg, clearly the capacity should be on rail. With taxis and buses, they'd be acting in support, rather than having, we currently have taxis moving from Johannesburg to them. We've seen it but at one up there, for example. Taxis that cannot even carry people, taking them to Devon, people waiting overnight for a taxi to go and visit their last one in Johannesburg, the first one. Whereas rail provides the kind of solution that you require for that type of thing. So I think part of what we are doing is not only to address rail issues, but also to begin to change the nature of our public transport, of our transport system, to enhance the efficiency and make the right kind of decision and say, why must we have taxis rather trains operating when you've got less than 5,000 people. It's inefficient to do so. Otherwise, we have taxis transporting 16 people over 700 kilometers. It doesn't make sense. And it's something that I heard when the committee dealt with the National Land Transport Transitional Act, the NLTT, TNLTTA. I think it contains some of the best principles that should enable us to plan and transform our public transport system. And maybe this is the time now for us to give effect to most of those things so that we can achieve the kind of goals that we have. The other services, some of them cross boundary. I think that the Johannesburg Maputo is one important service that we think we should be introducing. There's been discussion. There's also been agreement between Shosholoza as well as the Zimbabwean National Railway Corporation that is leading up to 2010. More people from Africa can use those services into Johannesburg on the regular basis. Of course, there are border control issues, which I think that the government will give us guidance on how to manage those. But the key thing, the $1 billion over 3 years will be spent on Shosholoza Bay. And we are, of course, in further discussions with Treasury to review those numbers. But for now, that's what is contained in our business plan. I must emphasize that the $500 million is strictly for operational, on the operational side. And of course, we've got the $200 million for the locomotive. So we think that we should be given another $180 to $200 million to invest more in the coaches that we have. So the second intervention that we have is in terms of what we call priority A corridors. It's recalled that cabinet approved what we call the Rail Plan, and it has identified a number of corridors, and the most important of those were the priority A corridors, where rail move massive numbers of people, high volume corridors, and government has said you must improve services first and foremost in those corridors. And I think that we are trying to focus most of our resources there. And you could see that the service levels that we're trying to do, we're trying to have frequencies improved, 5 to 10 minutes headway during the peak period by 2010. I think that that will be given as a mandate. We're working on that. Of course, we are talking about 5 to 10 minutes. Mr. Paul and I visited some of the rail operations in Switzerland. They're talking about 2 minutes headway. So it shows that we are still far behind in terms of that. But I think with the investment, we should be able to catch up. Some of our systems, like Invest, some of the corridors are able to do a 3 minute schedule. The signaling system can enable us to do that, but the rolling stock is old. So we don't want to risk from a safety point of view, so we don't want you to take that kind of a risk. So we want predictable services. I think we said that by next year, by 2010 rather, we need to ensure that services that we provide, the timetable that we provide, is predictable at around 90%, not the current thing where actually people do not know what is the timetable, because in the large part we are not able to honor. I think that's the major thing. The current operating hours here, we operate, as you know, almost 3.5 hours in the morning, 3.5 hours in the afternoon. I think that the minister said, let's change that. Let's have more operating hours. The more you invest, make sure that you run our trains for almost 16 to 18 hours a day, and then use the other time to maintain and do that type of thing. And we think that it's achievable within by 2010. Train availability said 96%. I think that the 500 coaches, the 700 coaches, and 700 coaches that I spoke about, they are aimed at ensuring that 96% of the 4,600 coaches are available for use by 2010. Currently, we do not have that choice. And we think that it's something that we are in the process of changing, and I think that we put a lot of pressure on this. Safety and security, I spoke about it, Chair, that the rollout of the railway police has given us the opportunity to reverse some of the negative issues that we find in the rail environment. And I think that the continuous rollout of the railway police and the numbers of the very clear program, as you put more people, the others go for training, and that of course we see that the problem, Chair, from the safety point of view, in a sense that yes, we've got the police, but we've been able to achieve that level of coordination and synergy to support our operational requirements that we have. punctuality here, we're moving beyond 87% to planning is at 90%, and I think that is something that we think we'll be able to do here if we focus our resources in the right way. The second thing I'm going to say is, of course, the accelerated learning program. I don't want to go back into the thing. That we, this year we're delivering 500, already 415 has been delivered, but in the 08-09 financial year, it's 700 coaches that will come in. So it's putting a lot of pressure on the suppliers, on the contractors who do our work for us. Historically, they'll be given work on an annual basis. They'll be given lower numbers. So, however, we change the plan now. We are allocating them, we've given them 3 to 5 year contracts so that they can plan forward. And we've given them, we've allocated them coaches over a 3 year period, not on a yearly basis. But we've also introduced penalties to facilitate poor performance. Not only by them, maybe by ourselves. Because there are instances where we allocate them work, but when we don't receive the coaches on time. 3 months down into the financial year, they haven't received the coaches. And I think that it has made my concern. So we put penalties that ensure that both the contractors and ourselves perform in terms of that particular project. And those will review on a yearly basis, including, of course, the pricing credit that goes with it, to make sure that we also, with the increase in volume, because the other thing is to handle, 3 years ago, they were handling all the suppliers, they were handling 200. I'll give an example of Union Carriage Share. Initially, about 10 years ago, it had over 1,000 employees working in Niger. 3 years ago, they retrenched people to about just over 200. With the introduction of our own program, that numbers have gone to over 900. And that they've indicated that by the end of this year, they would have gone to over 1,400 employees to meet the kind of thing. And it's a revival of not only of that company, but a revival of the Niger area, because we're injecting those people in that community. So the accelerated rolling stock program is an important intervention that was mentioned in the rail plan. But Chair, as I said, that a lot of people say, we are giving you money to implement this program. It is only buying us time, and I want to emphasize that. It is not the solution. It is not the long-term answer. It's just buying us time for the next three years.
Okay. Can I just something briefly, sorry, as members were coming in, the Defence Portfolio Committee was going out and they ate our breakfast, basically, or snacks. And some of my members are diabetic. So just to say, we've reordered and we've charged it to the Defence Portfolio Committee. We've reordered, so if members are battling with sugar levels or whatever, there is stuff outside. Maybe when Lucky is finished, we can take a well, let's see how we're doing on time. I don't want to, but members are welcome to help themselves. Sorry to interrupt you, but passengers are, it's important to look after passengers.
I think we move to a point also when we provide also the kind of service and our trains, particularly social laws. I think Madam Muma, we have used that system very well, you know, all the time, and I know that Member of Parliament Kuno also uses that service on a regular basis. So we talk about things that we know. So I think that the accelerated rolling stock program is very important, very important. So we are taking another bold step. We historically have operated as housing at two different regions, VET and what is it called, FAN. And we know that there's been quite a lot of initiatives that goes to that system. Especially from an investment point of view, it means we must build two systems on a region that is greatly integrated. We think it doesn't make sense, so I think we've taken that step. But secondly, we've seen from a scheduling point of view, Chair, because of the configuration, for example, at the Pretoria station, you have somebody coming from Johannesburg back into Pretoria station. Usually, before that train comes in, it's stopped. They allow all the trains to go out so that we can make provision for that. But the person who's on board, he actually wants to use that train that is going on as a connecting point. So it actually extend their travel time with our station. So they have to wait for another train in the next 45 minutes. So I think that we feel that with a better scheduling and reconfiguration. So, but at the heart of it is the need to have a housing-based central train control system and an operating center. And I think that you see the budget, we've made provisions for that to begin that process. 520 million over the next 3 years is something that then it will of course mean as the recent signaling some of the key corridors in both West and Swan to be able to achieve that. So you can see from the numbers that the southern housing, what we call West, plays an important strategic role. This is at the heart of the economy. And I think that that's where our economy should be high. 72% of all public transport trips in housing are made within that particular area. And we think that we should change the power of those people. So I think this year we'll be taking the step to make sure that we move those regions. And I think the incident in Swan, the train building incident in Swan, has actually highlighted that point very clearly that's what we need. I think it was one of the conclusions of the board of inquiry that we set up to make sure that we begin to take steps towards operating. And then many countries operate their entire network as one. So there's no reason for us to operate in housing with two different systems that are costly to maintain. So we create that housing in the center at the cost of 520 over 3 years. So we decided when we were analyzing what were the successes and the failures in the first year of our turnaround for our stabilization plan, we realized that we were putting a lot of emphasis on the availability of trains. But we then put emphasis on reliability. So because the trains are old, we then realized that it's very important for us to improve the level and quality of maintenance. And you see there that in our business plan this year, we are putting a lot of emphasis on what we call planned and preventative maintenance program. That will also require that we upgrade our current depots. We've got depots in Swanee, in Devon, here in Cape Town, the South River, but the equipment, the skills and everything in those depots are not at the right level. So that is one of the things that we are doing and putting emphasis on. And if you see that our budget on maintenance and materials has increased by 18% to about 707 million for the current financial year. Here on strategic initiatives, and then I think on operational safety, this year is an important year. The rail safety regulator and the Act requires us on an annual basis to apply for an operating license, and that as part of that condition was implemented what we call a safety management system, which tells us about ensuring safety in operation. We've got that in place, and this year we have to go back to obtain or retain that license. There are no guarantees that we'll get this year because the rail safety regulator does conduct what we call regular audits to see whether we're operating in a safe manner, and it can make its own conclusions. We have to submit the safety plan as part of that process. And of course, we have to review implementation over a period of 2 years. We are also integrating the safety standards and the quality management that we have in our own system. I think that we are trying to ensure that we engender a culture of continuous improvement. And I think that your quality management in terms of processes, procedures, and systems is aimed at doing that. And say one of the reasons, one of the problems we found in Swan with the train incident was the fact that we're not able to manage the problems that came up there. Because our management system, our quality management system, a lot of people say quality management is a luxury, but it's only when you see what happened in Swan to see how people responded. Without the system, without the proper structure, without ensuring that we properly document them and make systematic intervention, that you realize that we need to ISO 9000 as a way into your system to make sure. And of course, there is a tendency when we do the ISO 9000 that we want to get the certificate and put on the wall. But people are not taking seriously the findings that are there. Because the issue is not only the certification, it's to be able to pick up on the findings so that we can improve and learn from them. And those are some of the things that we've done. We picked up, for example, in Swan with the recent incident. And I think we think that it's something that we need to put emphasis on. So in 2010, I won't go back. I think that we've committed 700 million rand already. Over the last month, construction is about to commence. Some of them were already delivered, like on the contact point. And I think that that's what we say, that in the course of the year, we'll be inviting you to visit some of those projects to see the construction underway, to see how accessible they are, and all of everything. So let me then say, because I've got two more slides to do, I'll move quickly. We are putting a lot of emphasis here on skills development. I think that we spoke about it, the issues about leadership development program. So we find in railways, more specifically here, that the management culture is not that very strong because of the many years of underinvestment. People are not making major decisions. And you find that we've got a very weak management at both the heads of the organization. So we put in place the leadership development program so that we train as many of our managers to become good managers, to be able to make the right decisions. There's a lot where people are doing things to protect themselves. To say, look, as long as the CEO doesn't take action, or as long as the board doesn't expose me, I must just do things to prove, not to take the organization to them. So people are not even prepared to make the risks that are required. Particularly in an organization that's changing, you need people to make those type of decisions. So that program here will target our executive, our middle management, and the supervisor itself. Our supervisor itself here wants to emphasize. If you look at our maintenance, if you cannot supervise that effectively, then you're going to have a problem. Because we have trains that come from a depot, getting into the system in phase. Because the management, that supervisor level, to check the documents, whether everything was done, quality checks and everything, is not in place. So it's very important that all of these people are trained. So we are trying to, we've got what we call an entry train, where we invite students, particularly from primary school, to experience race, talk about the careers and rates and everything. We're also reaching out to teachers around the country so that we then popularize this railway culture in the country which doesn't exist. So we've got the bursary program, and currently here we've reached an agreement with UCT to establish a center for transport studies, and we are contributing $3 million to that particular program to train people. We don't think that this one is something can only benefit our people here. I think that we think that also some of the people who want to do transport studies from our counterparts in the SADC region in Africa can be invited to participate in that program. And I think that this is due to be launched, I think that in a few months. We postponed that twice here, but I think that is on course. And I think we've got a number of students now. How many students are there? 88 who are going through that program so that we can make sure that we have it. The learnership here, I think you can see, we're spending $10 million on that, on train operations, technical training, and protection and protection services. We have, of course, adopted an employee wellness program, $9 million that we spent onto that. It's a lot of money there. Well, for a company with 9,000, over 9,000 employees, I think that is very important. Our drivers are going through very stressful conditions. We need the counseling for these people, and that program becomes very, very important. Very important. I must say, I forgot to say that we've now realized that we need it. Historically, Metro Rail, for all its technical disciplines, as part of transport, have utilized the excellent path. For example, the training of their own technical disciplines. But we are part of that. They've got their own program. We're finding it difficult to get them. So we've taken a decision that we needed to have some kind of academy, a college of our own, so that we continue to reproduce those skills. And I think that is something that we are looking at. We've even gone to look at all hospitals to see whether we can convert them to play that kind of role. Because we've got a lot of these public buildings that are standing there that can be converted so that we train as many of the people that we need instead of complaining about the shortage of skills that we have. The last one here is on enterprise. I think we are trying to focus enterprise on the most important things. And we said clearly in the mandate in our business plan that the role of enterprise is the development of properties and stations in and around the red environment. We don't want enterprise to go and focus on other properties that have nothing to do with our business. We think that is very important. We think that they must do the station improvement program. And in line with that strategic objective, Chair, we've recently approved a number of effective projects that we think in the long term would achieve two objectives. One, to contribute to a greater usage of rail, but secondly, to generate income for rail. And those projects that in Cape Town Station Redevelopment is a major project, Chair. I think that the second phase, we are spending 110 million to prepare Cape Town station for 2010. But the second phase, where we are looking at even private sector funding, it will be in the region of plus minus 5 billion for the redevelopment of that station. But I won't go into the details because the details will be announced soon. Mabopane station, I think members who have been to Mabopane station will agree with me when I say that the Sanapoli station, the years of neglect, the failure to manage that station. I've gone there three times, our minister has visited that station. And we've taken a decision here that we need to commence with that project. So that Mabopane is the second biggest station in the country. The whole of Fani North, people travel, they don't go into town, they travel into that station and get in there. But we are not providing the kind of facility that is required. So here the other projects that we've approved. And of course, for us to be able to move forward in conclusion, I want to say that we have begun to implement a number of initiatives and interventions. I think that those interventions by themselves will not change the system. If we put more change into the system, but do not change, for example, the way in which we manage public transport, we are not going to achieve the kind of goals that we have. If we want to invest in rail, but continue to allow parallel transport to compete rather than compete, we are not going to succeed in terms of that. But for us as management here, Chair, we are also in agreement that we don't want government to come in investment into an inefficient system. We've taken it upon ourselves that we'll enhance and improve the operational efficiency, and there are quite a lot that we can and save the cost that are there. I think that's the commitment, the public commitment that we want to make. So the coordination between ourselves and the transport authorities in the form of metros, municipalities, district councils, the provinces and national government is very important. And I think the point that we've made before. But Chair, the long and short of it is that for us to succeed, for us to sustain all the initiatives that we've taken, the capitalization of rail in this country has become even more urgent. I can't emphasize that more. And I think that brings us to the end of our
session. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, thanks very much. Thanks for a very confident input. Okay, can we trust ourselves to take 5 minutes break? Would you like a bit of a comfort break? Or would you like us to rest on? Take a little bit of a break. Okay. But not too long so that we can give ourselves a good hour of interaction. Okay. Okay, so let's make it 5 minutes then. So thank you. And we'll come back in a minute. Two questions or issues that members want to raise? Zulu, Stewart. Okay, we'll start with those two for the moment. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I welcome the presentation. I think we're getting there. Chairperson, you know, as the ANC, we were worried about some of the legislation that we passed and it's not implemented. You know, and when you started to talk about transport systems that are fitting to each other, like if you want to have transport systems that is efficient, safe, and everything else, we cannot talk about trains only and not think about buses and taxis. And I think that in your presentation, in a way, you did try to cover that. And that is very important. And we want to see that happening because at the end of the day, we want to see our transport system linked to each other. We want to see integrated transport plans talk to each other. The other thing, Chairperson, is that I see that you are concentrating in some of the provinces, but other provinces like Northwest, Northern Cape, Free State, and Mpumalanga, it's not taken care of. I don't know when maybe you have done your feasibility study and you've seen that Metro Rail and Toyota Mail is not needed in those provinces. What is your vision? And when we talk of rural development, you know, we always talk about rural development. What are we doing for rural development? And when it comes to planning, we don't plan Ghana has no development. So I just want to find out why other provinces are neglected. And there was a survey done, house survey. When was it? I think 2 years ago. Where we were told that 70% of commuters use taxis. But I hear you talking about 2.2 million trips a week. How does that fit in that survey? Were you not part of the survey as friends and all that? And when you start off talking of, is it 12.6%? 12.4% that you said you are above target for your presence at this. Can you explain in terms of the 2.2 million that you have given at those numbers? The wellness program, has it been done before within your department? And why are we starting with 9 million rents? I mean, to me, I know what you have said is motivated, trying to motivate it, that people, it's very important. I know that we always have wellness programs here in Parliament, but I wanted to find out what really informs the 9 million rents. Thank you,
Chairperson. Okay,
no, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I'm always asking a question on the definition of South of Gauteng that I believe does not exclude the VAT in terms of population density. But the most interesting case, Chairperson, I was listening after this morning after 8 debate, and I was starting on the CEOs, they need to have CEOs key performance indicators being include skills development. And this coincidence on the page, I thought, on the page that deals with strategic initiatives in terms of skills development, and this is very interesting. I would like to hear as to how does one access this information, the information that relates to this. Also, you know, you mentioned government priority, for instance, of early childhood development, which is in line with the DORA. I'm just saying we have constituencies, and this is also that interest. The issue of students we deal with. So I would like just to maybe be furnished with information that relates so that we can benefit out of it. But on the other, I believe that we just have to follow up in terms of which areas have been targeted, which areas have not been, without ignoring the negative impact of, you know, industrial development that created something, which I believe is a challenge to you, the same as Chapter's in the issue of special development, which you keep on raising every time. We know that it's costly and it's a problem to you. But there are areas we mentioned, like an example that was cited, for instance, of areas that are along the Golden Highway, far from, using that as an example, without ignoring other areas. Sensitizing around that, we believe that because we have a responsibility also of monitoring governance in terms of deployment of resources, so that if you have challenges, then let us know so that we can engage Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you to Lucky for, as he always does, give a very honest disposition of his organisation and all the problems that he covers. I've got a few things, Chair, that I would like to raise. The one relates to the issue of the integrated passenger transport company, and I must say that I think a lot of us were nodding heads here when we saw this coming about, but I just have a couple of questions, maybe of concern. The first is that he mentioned Autopax as being one of the sort of integrated busing companies that you would be associated with, and I just all of a sudden thought of, you know, this inheriting this old dilapidated fleet again, which puts you back into the same process, and how that would, you know, fit in, not so much with the regional connections, which I have no problem with, but more with the metro municipal connections integration. integration thereof. And that is a totally new ball game. And I would just wanted to know whether Lucky could just give me some sort of thoughts as to where they're going with that, particularly the roles of metro and municipalities, who I believe should be providing that sort of service for commuter service anyway, at the end of the day. And, you know, there's an old adage, you say, stick to your knitting. You know? Anyway, if you have some information, I'd be grateful. The second one really relates to the whole refurbishing program. Now, if I look at what's been done, it's about 10% per annum of the 4,000-6,000 odd coaches. And, you know, if we continue on that vein, although there might be some increase in momentum, we're looking at 10 years, you know. And then it's a bit like the taxi recapitalization program, which you know very well about. By the time you get there, you're recapitalizing again. If you could just give us some sort of indication now, these refurbished coaches that are coming on, what sort of lifespan do they have now with normal, let's assume that there is normal maintenance going on there. And with the six odd coach builders, you spoke about allocating from 200 moving up to sort of 500. What is that procurement time frame, you know, of the refurbishing coach and on the one hand, and then to get the new coach on the rail at the other. And then the last one, which is also a technical one relating to the Chwani Tia Bushwa extension. You mentioned something about going to a wider gauge there, and my understanding was that there has been some sort of, let's just call it some sort of agreement breach, that within the setting that would be the ultimate to gauge with. But how is this going to now fit in with your current system? And how do you go from one gauge to another to ensure that you have that integration? And, you know, what's going to happen then about other areas where you operate, particularly on some of the regional services, which, you know, has an issue with the Kai rail service. I mean, that thing, from what I understand, is going to take 12 hours for a 3-hour taxi journey. So, you know, what are we achieving there? I know we're taking...
Your mission is it would take 12 hours.
Yes.
There's a 3-hour by taxi.
And there's also a problem there, Chair, in so much that between East London and Amabele, where the connection starts from, there's a bus service being operating now by, Metro or SARCC to be able to take passengers to that point. Now, I want to know is why can't that thing go through Kumkerville into East London so that there's a continuous journey, as opposed to people having to get on a bus, go to Amabele, pick up the rail, go to Umtata, come back 12 hours later, you know, and do the same thing about getting back onto a bus again. Now, I suspect, and I don't know, that, you know, Spornet is the bugbear here. They are saying that that's our rail unit and we need it for goods and services going north, and therefore, you know, you can't have the rights to using those sort of concessions. And I think it's very unfortunate because now we've launched a branch line like this for passenger services, and it's really, I think, it's going to become a white elephant unless you can actually, A, improve the time framing of getting to those areas and also to get away with that bus service. So, you know, maybe you can talk about that. The other thing, if I can just have the opportunity of just bringing up, is something that came to me about the refurbishment of stations. If you go into Park Station and you don't know the way, you actually don't know how to get into the parking area, you don't know where to park. The security, as you know, from the parking area up into the platforms is shocking. And particular people, older people, picking up passengers or short of the mail there, are subjected to all sorts of problems. And one of the things that I don't think is maybe happening is that there's no advisory service that you can actually phone to say, how long is this train going to take, or is it running on time or not? Because at 4:30, everything closes down there. And, you know, there is no continuation of staff or communications with the public to say whether, in fact, you know, that the train is coming late. Thanks, Chair. It's a bit long.
Okay, no, that's fine. Okay, I've also got Barbara and Maxwell and Leonard, but already there's quite a lot of things on the table, so let's take those responses. If any of the four of you or anybody else wants to as it were, piggyback in on one aspect of the questions that we raise, don't hesitate to do that. Don't wait for your turn. So let's get lucky to answer the questions, and we can piggyback in on them as he's answering them. Okay. Lemon?
Yeah, I think we'll have lots of comments with the rain on the issue of the early time.
And likewise, okay. But let's wait for a particular thing, and then if you want to do a bit of a follow up on that specific area, that's fine. Rather than just stick mechanically to this. Okay, thank you, sir. Lucky.
Thank you, Chair.
And
the other colleagues will deal with a more difficult question.
Yeah. No, exactly.
That sounds very much for me.
And listen, learn risk management. Yeah.
Thanks for the comments that have been made. I think that if you look at the ready plan and what we are trying to achieve, and the ready plan has been approved by cabinet. And when we presented it to cabinet, the immediate response has been, and I recall at that time it was the deputy president, a good ready plan. But of course, we approve it on one condition, that you guys must go back and do detailed work on rural rail requirements. And I think that as a corporation, we've done work and produced this indeed, because we're coming from a commuter background, which is essentially a metropolitan area, the rural areas were not taken on board around that. But we are, as things stand right now, it's only one province that I think we have a complaint that we are not catering to them. That is the Northern Cape, that we are not adequately meeting, and that is because of the current currently have a problem with the long between the savings between that province and Tumapiki, because the numbers are just too small, that actually the cost of running that service would be better to done either in a bus service or with the thing. But we're involved in discussion. Let me go into some of the details. For example, the Popo province, we have an agreement with them. They've even transferred funds to ourselves, Chair, for us to assist them to develop their entire integrated plan, and more specifically with the type of requirements. They don't even need only social laws. I mean, they're saying Pulukwan is growing so much that in future it's going to require everything. So we currently have a project that we are doing on behalf of the provincial government. And that arose out after we met with them to discuss what are the possibilities for raising the focus. We've done the same, I think, when we talk about Rustenburg to Johannesburg, it's based on discussions and consultations with the provincial government there about what their needs are and how we can contribute to that. We, as you know, from your province, you know that we are looking currently at the between Bloemfontein and what is it called? Currently we've got the bus service there. And I think that we've done a feasibility study on behalf of the province to see whether we can switch, we can introduce a rail system. And the condition was one, that we can introduce a rail system in Buchanan to Bloemfontein, only if you're prepared to switch the current bus service. I know that the provincial government has made the choice that they'll go for rail for long-term interest, and they'll switch that over time and allow the buses to fit into that presentation. So I do think that is a good decision. Western Cape, we're working with them. The Eastern Cape, as I said, that it was one of those most neglected provinces. But I think that with both the Thai rail and the other things, I think that we're actually doing a lot more than in any other province. But I want to take that also to that opportunity to say that prior to, I think before we take over social domain, we didn't have any direct relationship in the rural area. And I think that is why we wouldn't talk much about the rural development. The repositioning of social domain gives us an opportunity to open up greater access for the rural masses, to access work opportunities, but also for a whole range of other things that they need to do. And I think that it's very important that it's done in the right way, it's funded at the right level, so that the rural people, particularly we talk about in all the debates, we hear people talk about development of state. In fact, can we have a development of state without creating the conditions for the rural people to access those opportunities? And we think that socialism may give us that opportunity, but not only as a long distance, as a regional system, gives us the opportunity to do some of those things. And therefore, we can contribute directly onto what we call a rural development and regional integration. I think that is very important. I think that the point that has been raised about, and I just want to take that to also jump immediately to the issue of the Kairos. Currently, the Kairos, of course, we're talking about the pilot project that is done on particular, especially over weekends, not a fully blown to create the demand for it there. And I think the configuration that Mr. Faro spoke about, I think that his observation is spot on, correct. And we said that when we introduce the savings and refurbish all the courses, we need to look at the other thing. But we're also looking into the rail plan. The rail plan has made a proposal that, look, Berlin, for example, is a growing area. It's not cheaper. Now, because as part of the call the last time we spoke about 40 new rail connections or what we call rail lines that have been proposed in the rail plan. Some of them we said we'll do it in 10 years, others immediately, like the Green City. It was one of those that we want to do in a long period of time, but we have to bring it forward because there was an opportunity to do so. So I think that configuration, the Ukumha, Berlin, Amabele, and other things, everybody says, actually says there's an opportunity. Other people said in my own rural area, there's great infrastructure, but there's no thing. And I think what the Kaif rail project has done, I think that has basically given us an opportunity to say the current approach where we've got rail infrastructure lying there and utilized is not a good one. And I think that has given us the space to do that. So I think that is the one positive thing about it. But we saw during the launch that despite all those positive gains, the danger about it is that people might want to do it as a second class type of thing. That is not, that doesn't look at issues of travel time, it's efficient and everything. Because if you know people travel for 12 hours, it's not going to help. Of course, the terrain and that line, we should just be refurbished. I think that the speed that it can take and everything is going to be its own kind of constraint. But I think that and I think that the type of locomotive that they're using is one of the major problems. There's an old locomotive that has been refurbished for that purpose. The speed is also not right, which contributes to some of the things. But we have said that because the provincial government had wanted immediate savings, that let's launch that, let's proceed, but we'll then redesign. And I think that will take on board the kind of the route alignment and what are some of the challenges that are there. So the final project is not, the final rollout in terms of the service design is not completed. And I think that we could look at that. And I think we'll take that as a comment that requires us to be better work on it, rather than closing it just for intention.
Okay, let's just hold on to that. Let's just see if there are I've got a couple of issues around this specific, the car thing.
Okay.
I don't know if there are others.
I mean, why? Okay, let's assume that you speed it up to 10 hours because you improved the locomotive or whatever. Why would anyone want to? That still means you've got to find accommodation or something at the other end because you're looking at a day's trip and then a return trip that you can't get to. You've got to overnight somewhere. Why would anyone want to do that and not catch a taxi? I mean, okay, it might be cheaper, safer, sure. But finally, the inconvenience of spending, let's say you bring it down to 10 hours versus. So, is it really a sustainable long-term approach? Shouldn't we be thinking autopacks or something? I know we've refurbished the line, it's a lot of expense, but I'm pretty excited that the paradigm shift that you've been making, which is not immediately, obviously rail, and rail is your core thing, but rail has great advantages but also disadvantages.
Sure.
And on hilly terrain and so forth, it's always going to have challenges and things like that in terms of the expense of getting the infrastructure in and then times and so on. And therefore, rail is not always the people desperately need decent public transport in rural areas. It's absolutely true. The best means to it is not necessary. We've now got the Kai Line, we've refurbished it. Let's make use of it and let's do the best job. But if we could revisit if we could rewind back to whatever it was 6 years ago, was it really the right decision to make? I don't know, but I think that rail is wonderful, and we need to champion it, but it's not always the right thing. And obviously, Northern Cape, as you were saying, given the distances and so on, I mean, it's automatic or things like that become. But then they need to be subsidized, as rail would be. Yes.
Now that's the other advantage.
Exactly. Taking those heavy trucks off the road, and I mean the loss of lives there is horrific, as we all know, that's quite tough. The problem is the fact that people want to jump on a train and know they're going to sit there to get to wherever they go.
Yes.
At this point in time, there's only a concession on the line from Amabele to Mthatha, which means that people are now having to get on the bus, travel there, get on the train, get off at the other end. When they come back, they get back on the bus. Now, that is a discontinuity of services, I see it, and I think that needs to be rectified. And I understand the problem there is the school is saying, no, you can't use that one.
No, we got that point. And that's the problem. We are aware of the problem. Okay, so on that one, but we're still talking about this intermodal and rural areas. I think there are, let's take the Malota corridor issue, because that also is part of an answer. Because Mpumalanga is not being neglected, for instance. And also the Vaal aspect, which we should do this. So maybe if we can take those things in an answer.
What's the problem?
Is it Mpumalanga? Hold on. Yeah, I was a bit, when you started the theory, became unsure of my facts, but it's all Kwandebele.
Kwandebele, of course, that is the first phase you're talking about, the Molotov rail corridor, but the entire project, of course, goes as far as Kukuneland. So it's not only confined to Molotov. So it involves about four district municipalities, Ekangala, Kukunita, Tswane, and I think that there are basically three provinces involved in the project, which is Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and the Limpopo the province. So all of them are involved in the steering committee, which decisions are made at the political level by the minister and the ministers and the mayors that are the real densest system, because we drive the project, and the Department of Transport has the policy for it. The areas of integration in relation to the use of wider gates, and I think the observation by Mr. Farrow that the decision in the African Union is that for any new project where you're building regular, move, because for long-term integration is going to help. We say that it presents problems, because I think the first question that would be around is the interoperability of the systems. Will you be able to connect? And with the current experience of how train, we've learned many lessons about how to integrate these things. One of those is some stations where you allow that they use the same station, but it's different. The tracks on both sides, where so the interchange is much more easier. But as I said, that there are other options where you basically allow, in addition to the two tracks that we have, the current narrow track or the Cape gate, you then build the third one along one. That's what I'm talking about. Where the trains, whether they are wider or narrow gauge, they are able to do that. So I think the detailed discussion and the cabinet decision arose out of the feasibility study that has been done, and also looking at the cost. And if you look at the cost on the benefits of in terms of speed and other things of the standard gauge, and also looking forward as to where we are moving. I mean, it's not easy now to find the technology that we are using. It's in most instances becoming obsolete. So it means therefore that it will be quite costly for us to go that way. And I think the areas of integration are quite so we could do it around the station, we can do it around the track. But also there's been now a rolling stock track. We've seen the emergence of also new coaches that actually can operate on board, which are that we think. But I think we'll see the future. So we don't think that the interoperability is going to be a major problem. The advantage also in Gauteng is the fact that with the house train coming on bottom on the wider gauge, you might want to connect onto the house train network than connect to our own. So we've got the choice that is there. So we move into making those detailed decisions. I think the principle has been look at the standard gauge, the benefits are greater in the long term, as compared to the narrow Cape gauge, which in the long term do you want to move on?
Just on the Hungary, when we did oversight a few weeks back in Chuan, they raised this matter with us. And possibly they've got a problem, but possibly they were attributing the problem to the gauge choice. And maybe they were wrong about that. But they were saying that the Chuani station for the Smilota corridor, which would then go on to Skunda eventually, is located, it doesn't come in at the main Pretoria station, but in the northern part of Pretoria somewhere. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that was their information, and they were raising quite a lot of concerns about that creating problems in terms of their integrated transport plan. And another set now of commuters arriving en masse in another part of the city, requiring then ongoing transport, buses or minibuses or whatever. And so they said they thought it had to do with the gauge. Yeah. And that's when I first became aware of the gauge issue. Now, from what you're saying, it can't be the gauge. It's more where you are designing to end it up, because I mean, there's no reason why using a standard gauge you can't end up at Pretoria Station. It's more the particular alignment that's chosen. So just to signal that, I mean, I don't have any professional opinion, but they were certainly raising a deep concern about, because obviously they're doing now a lot of planning around the Caltrain connection to their main Pretoria Station. So your Metrorail Caltrain interface in Pretoria is there, and so they're doing a lot of work around what then is required by way of shuttles and other transport plans. And now suddenly, on top of that, is now another major Metro Rail, Rail Community Corporation arrival. So if we could just ask you to liaise with them, because they did raise it with us. Okay. And I realize it's not a gauge matter. Probably, but...
I think it's an important concern they've raised. They'll be aware that the decision, for example, to go on this it was a decision that was made at the political level with a meeting where the mayor of Chuan, our minister, a number of other APCs were present. The feasibility has indicated that you can have two connections.
Yes.
Those are possibilities. One is that you can connect on the Mamelodi line, yes, which is basically with our existing metro in Pretoria, and yeah, the east goes there.
Yeah.
So that is one that has been raised.
Right.
Of course, there are issues about land expropriation, yeah, we have to look at. That is one. Then there are other options, which I think is what they are worried about, is that there's a possibility of connecting an amount of ground with the land that is there. So those are things that were raised in the feasibility study to say that you do a boat, it's something that can be done by the explorer,
right,
or that you must then look at the possibility of putting the land straight into consolidation. Now, I think that those choices at the project level will still have to finalize.
Okay, so there's no decision yet.
There's no decision specifically
on the situation. Okay. That wasn't the impression we got from them,
but that's
and obviously those are things that which need to be considered in terms of the pros and cons of different things. But the key thing is that you're assuring us that there is consultation, and sometimes, without straying too far, political heads don't understand, and perhaps it's important to have a connection also to hands-on officials in some of these places without being more specific than that. I think you understand what I'm talking about. Okay. Yes, Lenny.
Yeah. The Moloto rail line. I think when it was announced, there was mentioned that it will be implemented in conjunction with the provincial administration, Malama. Now, I just wanted to check what sort of interest would be the provincial administration having in that project. Is there any funding that they are putting in, or is it just mere consultation or cooperative implementation? The second one to that one on that project is the involvement of the current taxi operators. Whether the stations on that line will have some sort of small taxi rank around them for collector
public transport. Or because I have heard you, of course, talking about having your own buses or whatever at certain stations for some of these long lines, and one is just having the difficulty that it may end up undermining some of the local public transport programs.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Lucky, okay, and then also if we could answer that and then also deal with Mr. Dula's question around the VAL aspect of things.
Chair, I think I can confirm that Southern Housing involved into the VAL, and I know that the Serena-Hain line has been a major issue that I think the community of in the VAL, in the different areas of the VAL have raised, and it depends on that city. We've been trying over the past year to accelerate the level of safety. As you are aware, there is a problem on that particular line with the network being owned part of the section of that being owned by Spoilman. So what it has done is that you can run a train fast, you come to that section, there's a problem, your train has disrupted, and then go to the other side. So it's part of the what I would say, the legacy that has been held with the Legal Succession Act, when the subsystem transfer reform, that the allocation of the assets was in fact not done in the right way. Where you find that Spoornet, for example, in the middle of a commuter network, owns a section. We have that not only in that line, but we also have it in the other. What I can confirm, and to the Honorable Member, that in the VAL, what we've done is also in the light of what is happening in some of the projects, housing projects that, you know, in Everton and everything. But then I instructed Intersight to go and look at the stations that we've got there, so that then they can be built and upgraded in a way that supports that project. And I think there are three stations on that corridor that we've identified to, for further development, so that they can support that and rail can play that role. So I want to confirm that the VAL is an important thing. Important part for us actually that if you look at the viability of the southern housing, a lot of people work in Johannesburg, they depend on rail. And I know that historically, it's one of those lands where the people, the users of that service, have actually played a major in defending rail commuters from the same violence. So I think that history will come with it. There's no way with the value to shut down.
Yeah.
And the mayor has raised the issue with us very strongly to say in our investment program, it's very important that the VAL is part of that, and I can confirm that we are looking at it in that fashion. We will also share I think the information on the, for example, on the Desiree, on the kind of program that we want to sponsor the technical members. I think that we'll share with honorable members.
Okay, let's just leave that one there.
So that I think particularly from the constituency office, very important because we've seen in other areas where students with good results have stayed there without actual access. They want to do engineering, that we can say, do engineering, come and work in our own community for 5 years. It's a big trip for us. And I think that members say, facilitate some of those
problems. Okay, good. Let's go to the Molotov Corridor, because we were on the Molotov Corridor, just the things about the ancillary, you know, the sort of existing operations and so on, taxi operators, etc.
The feasibility actually deals with that more directly. Let me first actually say first that the provincial government of Mpumalanga, starting with the first MEC Fish Marshal and later with MEC Babuza, played quite a leading role in championing this project. The Ekangala district municipality played quite a major role in terms of what. The project is not only about range. It's about range, but creating a corridor, which means stimulating new economic activity along the corridor. And we believe, and that's what we believe, because at the beginning, we're fired from our because the district wanted to build the railway line, so we do not have the expertise, the capacity to do that. Who builds the railway line? What we must do is to maximize the investment opportunities alongside that. That is the first thing that has been done. The second one relates to the current taxi and bus operator. The main operator there is PASCO, as you are aware, and if you do not manage it correctly, PASCO sends you to do it. Because as a know that the government subsidized the Muloto saving. I don't want 300 million to move those 630 and I think that there is a concern on the part of the Basel, for instance. But I think that the report is saying you need to ensure that both parties, Texas and Bayern parties, are integrated into the system. Because currently the Basel also, the Texas run, they also travel a long distance. We're talking about 102 kilometers, and when you include the other second phase, it will be about 170, 180. So it's quite a long distance. But here I think that the point is made, actually the feasibility study, it says for this thing to work, you need to ensure that the role of the market and the taxes are clearly taken on board. So it is in areas like those that will never compete with the current existing market and taxes. I think it's related to the point that Mr. Faro raised, shouldn't municipalities be providing some of the services? I'll tell you, Chair, that we've had a big problem. I have personally said, for example, the metro bus in Johannesburg, can you please schedule more buses from the Johannesburg station? So that when we bring the Soweto Business Express and all our officers can have access to a bus, it does not happen. We have not taken a decision today. We have to contract them on the service that they should be rendering, but it's not happening in a way that supports our business. And that is why we say that in instances, that's what we need to complement with them. I also must confirm to Mr. Faro that fortunately we've raised the issue about the delimitated parties and everything.
Okay, just hold on that. What we've got, because I'm also worried about time, okay? We've got the autopass issue. We've got Park State, the refurbishment of coaches and the purchase of new coaches. We've got the park station issue. Let me get a sense of what other, because I've got a long list of people also want to talk and I'm worried that people won't get a chance. So let me get an order. Barbara? Anything else? You're okay. Okay. Maxwell? Yeah, please. Let's get a sense of what it is. Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. No, just for interest, can I just understand what makes a decision that was taken in 2004 by Chemnitz only get implemented now in 2008? I just want to understand.
Which decision are you referring to?
The issue, sorry?
Which decision are you referring to?
Which?
Which one? Which decision?
The consolidation of the passenger and entities.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Just for interest, is this the issue of resources or is it...
Why delay?
Or is it laziness or what is it? Is this what's wrong?
Okay.
And taking into account the skill shortage that the CEO talks about, and of course I think this skill shortage is the reason why they have invested so much in that skills program, which is good, it's always good to invest in your human resource. But I just want to understand, with all those challenges that you have mentioned there, your aged assets, your overcrowding and so forth, how do you then measure your performance with all those problems that you have? What tool are you having to measure your performance? Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Maxwell.
Thank you, sir. Sir, in the report that the CEO gave us today, what is absent to me there is a long-term plan to plan. He's talking about the sort of skills that we have and what he's putting in place. That to me is part of the long-term planning. But I'm thinking of the fact that the railway has deteriorated over the couple of past 10 years, it's reviving again. But what do we want to see over 20 years? Obviously, with flexibility in between because of technology and all this. But I want to see a genuine long-term plan. I think that is absolute. Secondly, the Cape Town station, the redevelopment of Cape Town station, I would like to hear, especially from the regional minister, are we talking about only the part of Cape Town station where the buses are and the trains are? What about the other side, where the objectives are making use of. It seems to me to be excluded, but I just wanted to know about it. Thank you.
Okay. Offensive?
Chair, thank you. Chair, I've got 15, about four questions. But to make follow-up on the issue of feasibility studies, I just want to check the feasibility study in page 11 of the presentation, the one for Cape Town and the airport here. I just want to check... It says it has been completed.
Yeah.
We know that for the fact that after the feasibility study has been done in Centurion, there was a lot of problems. So I just want to check here, what problems have been encountered? That's question number one.
Centurion is a reference to the car train.
Yeah, of car train.
Okay.
And second to that, whether stakeholders that operate in the airport here in Cape Town, whether it has been taken on board, those tourist operators, those taxi operators in the airport has been taken on board.
Okay.
My second question, Chair, 28,000 arrests has been made. I'm trying to check and make some notes in your previous presentation, 28 February last year. It's like, again, you reported last year that there was around 28,000 arrests. Now, I still want to check, Chair, on what type of crime these people have been arrested on. Whether is it jumping a railway line, jumping out of the moving train, stealing purses. Stealing IDs, because ID now people are making money out of IT, stealing cell phones and so on.
Okay.
And whether, because there was a pilot, and this pilot is a full-blown project now, whether these police that are there, 1,000, you said in page 11, 1,800. Yeah, 1,814, that have been deployed. Are you saying CEO? Are you saying because they don't make any impact in as far as dealing with this crime? Or the result of 28,000 arrests is as a result of visible policing? And in line of my question in terms of that, Chair, whether have you checked all the feasibility study? I'm raising now this question on the basis of these people who burn the trains in Pretoria area. Whether you haven't checked the feasibility of implementing the CCTV. I'm Chairperson like to say I like talking about CCTV because you can go back and retrieve the data and catch the culprits. I know that there were some kind of money that were being set aside to deal with those criminals. My second last question, Chair, is around the management. CEO came there and suspend management of those who made the train to delay. How far is the case of those managers? Whether they are guilty, whether they have been brought to book for messing up with the train, what is happening currently? Lastly, Chair, your page 14 of the current presentation. I'm sorry I've numbered my page because we have not numbered your presentation. My page 14 and the page 29 in terms of skill development. I just want to check, what is the significance of Transport Training Authority, the feature on skills development? Whether is it part of that, and if it is not part of that, why are they not part of ensuring that there's enough skills in rail operation? Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
thanks for that. That's a good last question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's this thing of interfaith. I just want to know the metro rail, we are monitoring the people, what the interface of the interface idea or what? Because my question is about the Cape Town station, the health hazard Cape Town station, because there is a market during the day in Cape Town station. But it can go after 10 at Cape Town station. Rest the big like me, you know? There is a soccer team. You know, you can fill up the F&B stadium with those rents. Really, it's really scary. I was very scary, you know. And for health hazard, really, can talk in the fact that they must make sure that if the stations are clean, but they must make sure that they're putting poison for the rest. It's very bad. I wish you can go there. You can see the big map of Bapana Bapana. The Cape Town station. My second question is Premier Class, because maybe I'm marketing Premier Class, I don't know. If you tell members about the Premier Class, they say, how can you go to Joburg before you go to Eastern Cape or to Durban? Because this Premier Class is from Cape Town to Joburg, from Joburg to Cape Town. And remember, they want the Premier Class to go to Durban and to go to another province. My main question is the rest. Thank you.
Okay. Levis and then Mrs. Nkabiente. And then
Levis. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to repeat, I think, the old question. The rail service between Masuruga, Yamazan, and Nelspruit. I think I just requested some sort of research or something.
Yeah.
And the day that I'll get the response, I'll be the happiest. Then
you'll have to bring a case then, like
yeah. Okay. And then unless if I was sleeping, Jefferson, that they have responded back on that one.
Okay.
Then the second one, Kaviting requested me to ask about the long distance railway service, whether there are any plans of looking after the train drivers, sleeping arrangements, and so on. You know, some sort of social responsibility on the operators of the train in terms of sleeping or whatever, you know, because they are actually driving for long hours. She wanted to know that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of my questions have been covered by offense, Chairperson. It's around the 1,814 railway posts that have been deployed. Would you all have cited that if fair evasion is standing at 8.8, and last year it was below 5%. So I just wanted to know whether the deployment of this railway police does have impact or not. And he also covered me about the banning of trade, whether it was after the deployment of this railway police or before they don't change the train. And what is the progress so far? Has the country has been comprehended or what is the situation? And again about overcrowding and risk of something. My concern is if now, as we speak now, we have this problem, what impact does it have in 2010 when most of the people will be using this train?
Okay, now we've got a bit of a challenge to answer. There's quite a lot of things. And I'm going to have to leave late at the 20 past. Okay. And I think other members might also be keen to the so let's jump in with your cooperation CEO to do justice to the many questions, but also maybe to be fairly tight. So let's go back to some of the hanging ones from Stuart first and foremost. The whole issue, the refurbishment program. Let's start there.
We'll come to stations. We'll deal with Cape Town and Park Station. Thinking that these 1,000 buses or coaches that we might need, the holding company would become Autopack. And so you wouldn't therefore find yourself getting toxic dumping from Transnet as you usually get. That you might actually get some. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. We would also support that. I mean, if we want you to deal multimodal, and therefore the Autopax idea is good, and particularly if Autopax is going to be massively recapitalized with 2010, but then there are set of other problems which you should be aware of, even if you're not yet in the Autopax business, which is existing operators, whether we can digest the 1,000 new, and there are a whole lot of that, but obviously we don't have time to go into that, my storage. I mean, I think as a committee, we like that idea that you think transport and not just rail. Okay, can we move along off that one then? And then the refurbishment process, which in a way relates also to Maxwell's question, one of his questions, which is, we understand, to try and rephrase it a little bit, we're hearing a message which is dialectical, okay, which is saying, a bit of money, we are stabilizing, but we're on the knife edge. And it's far from clear that all the things we're doing will really get us out of the vicious cycle and into a whole different terrain. It's possible, but Maxwell's saying, we want to hear that. Or if that's not the case, we want to hear that we're spending money and there's more money coming from that, from China. I mean, I think that was the essence of what you were saying today. There's more money, we welcome that. Commitment to rail, welcome that, but it's still uncertain whether we can get out of the vicious cycle. I'm just kind of keeping my head above water at best. And maybe if you can just talk to that and relate it to the refurbishment purchase and new coaches.
Actually, I think you're right. The issue raised by the Met, I think, is very important. We have, of course, the short-term measures are very clear what we need. But I think that then their own, they won't quite take it to the point. And I think that's what we the team, we debated this point, what are we trying to say?
Yeah.
And we said, look, let's reflect on it as only two problems.
Yeah.
There's been increased investment to address that need for stabilization. And I think that we're seeing those problems. But in railways, I think that the investment must be long term investment. It must be, and if you look at our strategy, particularly when we talk about growth, we think we must invest now for the next 25 to 30 years. For example, the rolling stock that we're thinking about should be for the demand. That is 25 years, the infrastructure that is there. And I think that we are not, the two things said that I want to say, despite taking on board the fact that there's been increased allocation from government, I think that we are not investing fast enough. The rate of change is not fast enough. That is my main worry. That some of the things that we do, they tend to be the forward and backward type of network, that directive that we spoke about.
Yes.
The second is the quality of the investment. We must make a strategic decision, for example, on the fleet, we must make a strategic decision, what we want to do, and make that decision and say, look, that's what we're going to buy. And that's what we're going to buy, X amount of this thing. Here's the maintenance program around it. I think that those decisions change. We haven't told them, that's what the uncertainty comes from. And I think the sooner we do that, the better. And I think that if you look also at social order, I think from a transport point of view, having social order is very important. But I think you could see that it's not being funded to enable us to do the long-term plan. We've developed a long-term plan change. We've now developed close the added onto the rail plan with the rural rail strategy to see where it can work, where it cannot work. And looking forward and say, what are the future? future corridors, not now, but in the next 20 years. And that is why some of the 40 corridors are not only for the next 5 years. They're dealing with looking at where demand and growth is going to come from over a long period of time. So I agree fully with Max that 25-30-year investment horizon you need. But I was also encouraged on Friday, Chairperson, that when we met with the DG of Transport, he said we're putting that comprehensive investment plan so that we don't only invest for today, we only invest for the future. And I'm hoping, and I think that in the presentation I alluded to that one, that hopefully that will address some of the concerns that we've got. So, Chair, in respect of the refurbishment, as I said, that we've got two options. The one option is that, of course, the immediate solution is that we're not going to get any. We can refurbish. We are paying quite, I mean, to refurbish a motor coach, you're spending about $5.5 million average, and a trailer coach about $3.5 million. That's what we have, and that's what we are managing over the next 3 years, so that we can as part of that stabilization. But in the long term, Chair, I think there are two options that we have. The one option would be for us to take a thing and say, okay, let's go to the PPP, let's buy this thing from somebody abroad and they ship this thing. That's an option. If you want a quick win and everything, we are not in favor of that option. We think that we must use this opportunity to develop our local manufacturing capacity. We think that we need, instead of those things, we build as well. We have to build the country and we need to provide the capacity to even service the entire continent. Said is that the current contractor company, because they've got capacity, they might not have the technology, but the capacity to build the bodies and work on the bodies and the wheels, we've got that capacity. And I think the SRCC and the probably government will be making a wrong decision if it allows the current pressure that we're in, so that this needs to be important at the time
of
building our own capacity.
To go to the
because the numbers are massive. The numbers are massive. So, Chair, the lead time will see. And let me outline some of our own thinking. We are saying that if we place the order, the end, every month we can place the order. We might say the first 100 or first 200 or 300, let them be sent because we need them by 2010. However, that must happen parallel to whoever gets the thing to build the necessary factory to provide that kind of capacity. And that is, in essence, our strategy. And I think that we structured our tender to, in essence, address that, so that we protect our industry, build our own local, and I think from an incentive point of view, it's something here that should be incentivized, rather than an approach that we allow it to be built in Germany and then complete coaches. And I think that, but also from a skills point of view, because then we're able to develop our own skills.
Are you talking to trade and industry about this? Because of the industrial project.
We're talking to trade and industry about the industrial project. They've been talking to us, but I've said, Chair, they've been talking to us primarily from, and I've said to the team. The team has said that the DTR talked to us because they've been lobbied by the international company, which is saying it's fine, but you need to provide that certainty. But we want us to drive our own industry. Where do you want to see railways? Because the industry requires. Massive, and we cannot afford to destroy them. So there's the industrial development part of it. There's the issue of the provision of trains, and I think the only bridge that we have is this accelerated transport program. But we are very clear, it's not our future, and we can the most we can extend it to 5 years. But we're spending a lot of money. 5.5 to
Okay. Can we then move to the specific station issue, and particularly with Park Station and Cape Town? Yep. What you're saying is summarizing their key message to us and through us to Treasury. Yeah. That's the key message. So they're just stuck in a vicious cycle.
And
they're stabilizing, and that's good, but unless there's, and that relates to Maxwell's question as well, where is the long-term vision? And they're saying, well, we've got the vision, but we're not sure that we've got the financial commitment. What we've got so far is better than what we've had in the past, but it's not good enough to break the cycle of just going round and round and round. We've got it all out. I'll speak in the appropriation. Well, I've been asked to speak on infrastructure, so I'll raise this matter to Mr. Finance, Youth Parliament, everything. And because it relates to electricity as well, and to a whole range of infrastructure programs. There's increased spending, but it's not breaking through into Maxwell's what is the 20-year vision? What is the sustainability thing? We're not doing that yet, which is not to say we're not spending lots of money on other things. Downstream, as I keep saying, or whatever. But okay. Yes. Yeah, no, that's the point. Yeah. Okay, can we get in specifically to Park Station, Cape Town Station, Radcliffe, Fafana, Mafana, and so on? Important issues, and born of daily commuting.
Chair, I need to be, Mamu, I know that she uses this not only Premier Trail, but also here in Cape Town on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I want to concede, Chair, that our station, we're badly managed. And we've written in the current business plan, in each and every station, issues of imminence. You know, I went to one station when I wanted to go to use the facilities there.
Yeah.
Our own people were saying, no, you can't go on that side. Mm-hmm. They were taking me upstairs to use another side because they didn't want me, because they didn't know I want to use that.
Exactly.
And they are not maintained. So I think that we want to concede that even our minister said that I'm looking at the station, it's in a terrible condition. So here we've given a completely changed the strategy. One, we said that, look, instead of Interside must focus on property development.
Right.
The people who operate trains,
we'll
have station managers who take care of the basic things, day-to-day maintenance, cleanliness of the station, security, customer care. Currently, our people do not even know who they talk to whenever there's a problem in most of our stations. So we've changed that. And we feel that we'll have the disaster. We then have station managers accountable for the station in everything that happens there. So that is one of the major changes, including therefore the issues about pest control and all of those.
Directions and just the general flow and so on. Okay, can we leave it at that? I mean, just in the short, it's not, but I think, okay. Then there's a set of security-related issues that are fancy, particularly, Mrs. Incubetti raised, around the railway fees, the numbers of arrests, etc. We could just address that cluster.
Chair, I receive every month from the Assistant Commissioner of Police who's driving the railway police. He sits with me regularly and he gives us, because of course the police are the ones with the authority to issue those things. They provide to us. We look at this and I'll tell you the kind of arrest that they deal with. It relates to issues such as robbery. I think that is robbery. It's armed robbery, theft, it's assault. If people come into trains with big knives and guns, there's of course train invasion and those type of things. But Chair, the present, I think if you look in 2 years running, when I reported the last time, I gave the numbers. At that time, our crime was around 40%. Particularly taking, and I gave an example of the Western Cape where the pilot was introduced. The rollout of the railway police has played quite a major role. It has created that sense of security. It has meant that people, of course, they think twice before they commit crime. But of course, we know, and when I met with the commissioner, one of the things is that, look, we are deploying our people, but the overcrowding makes policing more difficult. Mm. So we've got to consider that's the first thing. Second, we find that when they deploy, because they can't be in all the trains and all the stations, our people have clearly indicated to us, look, there's a problem. Sometimes after they pass, because currently we don't have the 5,000, we've got 1,080. What happens is that after they pass, because that has created that, but they cannot be each and every one. And I must report to the committee that the current contracted security companies who have been doing the bulk of our work, and most of them have been formally trained to do that. Hence, we've been focusing on issues of energy and you saw during the security conference, like, our system got exposed.
Yeah.
But from a training point of view, Chair, on the learnerships, we are working with SATEC, which is the under security of society. And on the training of employees, we've been working with the transport and science training and education authorities. So we're working with both of them.
And give us a report back on this. Are they any good, or are they just squandering the money on
I think there are two things. There are areas where in the design and in the certification of programs have been very good. But what we found, if they are not helping us, is that in respect of the technical skills, particularly you are engineers and everything, that you don't only need for railways, you need across the system. They haven't been trained that way, that they can go. And that's where our greatest need, the what we call scarce skills or whatever, they're not going to that care. But I think that there is room for improvement.
Okay. You've noticed that, sorry to interrupt, but you've noticed that government is flagging the possibility of using some of those teacher funds for actual technical colleges and so on. And you might want to think about that in terms of your plan. You're looking for a hospital or something like that. Because I think a number of us are asking a lot of questions about the teachers. I mean, it was a well-intentioned program, but it doesn't seem to be functioning effectively. And we think that, I think my colleagues who are also in the Labour Committee might agree or disagree, but on the face of certainly the teacher is not, our impression is that it's not functioning well at all. And because it's co-managed, so you need government to play a much more active management role. And I think you would then to comment as because you're contributing quite considerably, I'm sure, to the funding of these and not getting that quite well. Yeah. Okay. CCTV. Do you use CCTV? No, Craig, you haven't got an answer yet?
Yeah, I do not want to give
Okay, and you, Lily? Here's your answer or non-answer.
Yeah, I'll call you the non-answer. So, we said that we needed to create that.
But we said let's do the study first, because we are not sure whether for North Bridge and that region, we should be introducing a commuter rail service at this point in time. And I think they have a different view to us. They believe that actually the way North Bridge is grown in the surrounding areas is actually ripe for some kind of a commuter service. But the advantage of us is that there are lines there. So we haven't completed that work. Our network development team is involved in that work. So as soon as we've completed the work, we've come to a determination. I think we'll specifically write to honorable member and inform him about that.
Right. That's an answer. That's not a non-answer. Yeah. No, sure. But at least there's an answer which says that there's a process underway. The Cape Town... I think I was sleeping when it was answered. Consolidation... Yeah. Okay. That's the merger issue. The consultant. Sorry, yes.
No, sir, we didn't take long. I think at that time I was personally involved with this departmental side.
Yes.
And the decision we went on to implement immediately, there was a problem. It's recalled that when the first time, it was in 2005, there were quite a number of problems. So we went to implement the decision immediately. But 2006, May 2006, we implemented the first phase of that thing, which is when we took Metrorail and into the SRCC. So that first phase. So this is just we're completing now what was the cabinet decision. But I agree that the wheels might be rolling quite slowly, but the decision we've implemented immediately. There were challenges, including the massive strike that took place in 2005. Where labor wanted certain guarantees before we could, and some of them were dealing with them. One of the agreements was for us to address salary parity, the process that we've done, and that is costing us millions of rand. But it's part of the outcomes of that period, and
Okay. Just on that one, because we were expecting legislation any time now, in terms of the next step, which is the shuffle of the mail step, and we look forward to getting that. Hopefully it'll go quicker this one, because we've now got the experience, at least in legal terms, of how to do it. But at the same time, I think we want to say, don't go so quickly that you inherit the kind of problem that Stuart is raising, that you inherit a hugely problematic, that you get dumped with something. I mean, so I think, speed is important once a decision is made, but at the same time, speed is not everything. You can be so fast that you end up with a real liability, and you're not sure what to do with it. So Barbara, you okay. Yes, but we need to watch it, all of us, to think. The Cape Town International Airport feasibility thing, I'm a bit of a skeptic about it, to be honest, but without knowing too much about it. 4 kilometres, that's not much, but we know that 3 kilometres in Kylie 6 can take a long time. That's another long time. The peak passenger, the feasibility shows, I understand, 2,000. The direction seat now, is that sufficient to justify a rail station?
The
eight, that is arrival
at the airport.
That's at the airport. That's a booming airport. Yeah. And what is the portion? And what is one? What is an accurate assumption? And is that sufficient to justify? It's nice to have a rail, obviously, to Cape Town, but we need always to be responsible in those decisions and make sure that we.
So on that one, the feasibility shows that after the first 3 years of investment, we're beginning to hear the change where the breaks even, then there's more, in general, there's more revenue than the operating cost. Which is quite viable, but I think we're working with the city, remember with Art Surface, which is consulting with the other players on their airport master plan.
Right.
So they've made provision for the station now, that is one.
Yeah.
And of course we require the transport planners of the city in this particular instance. And we met with the mayor this one to brief you about what the feasibility says and everything. And they've raised other issues. So they said, look, it's a good thing, we think in the long term, that's what the city needs. But let us align with some of our own initiatives to make sure that we complement them. This morning, we set up the mechanisms for the process.
Okay. I think that's the thing that we need to. And this is not at 2010. It's not going to be right 2010. Because it's sometimes been advertised as that. But in fact, in terms of even the funding that's projected, if it goes ahead, it's not going to be 2010.
For us, the first phase is the 2011-2012.
Fine.
Of course, there have been political pressure as well. Can you consider bringing it forward? But from the discussion with the city, I think that it's not something that
Okay, there's a couple of few little things. There's the premier class. Why is it just Cape Town Joburg? I think I'm sure I've left one or two, but I think that's the one that I've got in that list.
Shall we fully agree? Actually, that in our negotiations with Transnet, we are saying that we should actually have two trains between Johannesburg and Durban, and we should be looking at the Cape Town Durban. And of course, that's what we are dealing with a lot of things that are related to social work.
Yeah.
Already, because everybody knows that we are going to inherit, take over this business from April onwards. But I think those are things that we are saying we'll investigate the feasibility of each of those and whether there are numbers. But I think it's something that we are doing. Fully with social work, the premier class needs to be expanded a bit because that's key in terms of the income for social work. But without neglecting the core of that business, which is the movement of people, massive numbers of people, from Johannesburg to East London, Johannesburg to Musina, and all of those areas.
Okay.
So it's on the agenda.
Okay. Sorry, I'm rushing you. The last one that I'm picking up is the suspended manager. What's the story there? And that's Victoria. And just to add, because we heard from the rail safety regulator yesterday that one of the things they spotted was a little bit something you said, but not connected to the Pretoria, the mobile farm Pretoria stuff, is that they felt that there was failure to make decisions to a too top-heavy management structure and people passing the buck and so on. But presumably the things are related, the suspensions and stuff.
So let me perhaps I should use the privilege of Parliament because the country. But after the train incident, and I think it has now become very clear, we appointed this board of inquiry.
Yeah.
And these findings are very clear. It talks about it made it is an organizational system.
Yeah.
Our people didn't have their hands, the pulse, whatever the thing. We they were not in control.
Yeah.
There was a gap. There was rain. There was a storm. But it's saying that is not the cause. That was the contributing factor.
Yeah.
If we had our risk assessment, risk management strategy, if we had everything in place, we wouldn't have had that problem. And I must say too, that when I took the decision to suspend the team, because they started in that about what actions they took. The Board of Inquiry, they produced a very different report about 6 months. We've shared it with the guys that that has been suspended. I gave them 7 days to respond to the findings of this report, which we have to be fair to them. So I won't go to say they're guilty or not.
Yes.
But I must mention one thing, there's a damning report.
Yes.
About our inability to manage this important asset. And I just leave it at that.
I just want to commend you for the actions that you took as a senior management in that respect, and not just to blame. I mean, obviously we compare the actions of people. It's self-inflicted injury, but at the same time, well done, and obviously then to build and learn lessons from it. So I think that without us reaching finals and so on. But I mean, really to look inwards as well when things like this. Because we, as the previous committee, went and looked when the Pretoria station burned, and there were definitely serious management failures. And a failure to manage the station, basically. So I think that's all the issue that you're talking about, that country. Look, I'm sorry to be rushing people, and every time we meet around Committee Corporation, there are 1,000 questions, which is a good sign, because we're very interested. Thanks very much for the report. Very excited by the paradigm shifts that are starting to happen. Obviously, for them to really happen is a long process. I appreciate that. But I think it's the right move. And let's hope that we together can get over being on the knife edge. We've been on the knife edge, but we've been on the knife edge with you for a while. But I think honesty, which is what we're seeing, which is the last response, is the beginnings of resolving some of these issues. So thanks very much. Okay. We'll see each other next week on Tuesday. No, Tuesday and Wednesday. We're having to cram in lots of things. We've got quite a bunch here.
Thank you.